Connected live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Leah Raymark is in the building as we celebrate the life of Quincy Jones. Leah Raymark, did I just say Leah Raymark? He's just left and Sheldon is now here. Sheldon, oh
I can
my
be
goodness.
Whatever you. A rose by any other name smells as sweet.
Sheldon. It's Sheldon. Oh, I'm so sorry, Sheldon. Oh, my word. Quincy's gone.
Oh, geez. That's such a. And we did a show earlier this
year
about him.
Exactly. There would be no Tamia without Quincy.
There would be no many people.
Many careers many would not careers. Have become what they are.
Indeed.
If it weren't for him. What a goat.
Yeah. I mean, Quincy.
Oh, man. What a goat.
You know, like, the thing is that Quincy is not even my generation.
Mm-hmm.
But he is my generation. Mm.
This is exactly it. I was telling somebody that Quincy was able to completely cross over. Like,
exactly.
Cross over in every genre.
Exactly.
Every genre.
Yeah.
Jazz,
yeah.
Hip-hop, R&B. He was able, he tapped into every single genre.
Yeah.
He was able to touch every single race group.
Yeah.
He was able to touch every single age group.
Yeah.
How's that?
So, and he transcended decades.
Yeah.
So, seven decade long career.
Man.
He started his career in 1951, which is pre-rock and roll. So, he was there, like in pop music circles.
Gosh.
We call like 1955, like, day zero of pop music. He was there before that. So he was part of the jazz era before rock and roll. And then in the 1960s got involved in rock and roll, and he had his big breakthrough hit in the 1960s was the song called It's My Party and I'll Cry If I Want To. That was one of his first pop hit singles. And from that to Tamia, and in the interim, just like this, like Ray Charles, Frank Sinatra, Dizzy Gillespie.
We could have an entire jazz show, for instance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where we only play music that he produced, jazz music that he produced.
Alone.
You could have an entire show on just R&B, entire show on hip-hop. Yeah, I mean,
exactly.
The list goes on.
And then also, he veered off into movie score composing. So he was scoring music for movies.
Yep.
So he did the music for Roots, which was this exceptional, like, television series, seminal moment in television history, Roots. And he did The Color Purple.
Mm-hmm.
And he introduced Oprah Winfrey and Whoopi Goldberg to the world.
Yeah.
Then he did Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and introduced Will Smith to the world. It was just like one thing after the next. It was just like music. And even Michael Jackson. So although Michael Jackson was already a famous star by the time he met Quincy Jones in 1978, he had already had four number one hits with his brothers as part of the Jackson 5.
But he was his next.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So had it not been for Quincy Jones, there probably wouldn't be
the Michael Jackson.
Yeah. There would have been Jackson
the mega
5.
Michael Jackson.
Yeah, there wouldn't have been that guy.
Yeah.
Because what essentially happened was in the late 1970s, Berry Gordy, who was the owner of Motown Records, and and I think this is the thing that happens with creatives.
Mm.
You like sort of master a field of creation,
mm.
and you're like, I need to do the next thing.
Mm.
And so with Berry, he'd sort of found the formula for how to break black music into a white market through Motown in the 1960s with the Supremes and the Temptations and Gladys Knight and then Stevie Wonder, Marvin Gaye, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And by the 1970s, he needed a new challenge and he decided that he was going to go into movie making. And one of the movies that he decided that he was going to make was a reimagination of The Wizard of Oz. And the movie that came out of that was a movie called The Wiz. And Diana Ross was the lead actress in the movie. And so Berry Gordy used all of these like Motown artists in the movie. And Michael Jackson was the scarecrow in the movie.
Mm.
And the guy who was doing the score composition for the movie was Quincy Jones. And Michael was very curious about what Quincy Jones was doing in the recording studio. And he used to watch what Quincy was doing. And he used to see like, what are you doing with that slider?
Mm.
And he was like asking all of these questions. And eventually he said he left Motown and he went to Sony and he was like, I want Quincy Jones to produce my album. But like Quincy Jones by that stage was 30 years into his career. And Sony was like, hey, you want an old timer to come and do your album?
Mm.
No one wanted Quincy Jones to do the first Michael Jackson Sony album, which was off the wall. No one wanted him to do it. They were like, the guy's old, he's a has-been. And on top of that, he's a jazz guy. He's not even a pop guy. And so Michael was insistent, I want Quincy Jones for my album. And that first album, Off the Wall, was a phenomenal success. It sold 20 million units around the world. And you had Quincy Jones experimenting with things like disco and funk and R&B on this album, which was completely outside of his realm. Up to then, he'd done some light pop music and he had done jazz. That was his thing, jazz. So now to have this funk disco album, Off the Wall, and if you listen to Off the Wall, it's just such a beautifully layered album. And there was Quincy Jones doing a whole other thing. And Quincy Jones famously said that finding the right producer for an artist is such an essential thing, because a producer is going to be able to breathe life into your work. And a producer also has to understand that you need to allow the room to empty itself out so that God can walk through it. That was Quincy Jones.
Frank Sinatra.
I love Frank Sinatra. I've always been a big fan of Frank Sinatra, just because he was just a cool dude, you know, just like a cool guy.
Yeah.
And he was part of the original Ocean's 11, the movie, and Sammy Davis Jr. So they had this thing called the Rat Pack. Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., Frank Sinatra. And they used to all hang out together, smoke cigars, and be just boys.
And yes.
And Quincy was involved with Frank Sinatra in the 1960s as an arranger and an orchestrator. And then this song was released in 1984. Frank Sinatra had been a bit out of the scene for a while. This was his last official studio album. It was his 57th album. I mean, there's no one in the industry today that's got that level of repertoire. And so Frank Sinatra wanted Quincy Jones, and Quincy Jones came and did this album. And actually, the whole thing started off, it was supposed to be a Lena Horne and Quincy Jones duets album. Frank Sinatra and Lena Horne duets album. But Lena Horne was having problems with her voice, and Frank Sinatra landed up booking other things, and so the project fell apart. And they then decided they were going to do this album called LA Is My Lady, which was Quincy Jones and Frank Sinatra. And they recorded a whole documentary about it. And in the documentary, you see Frank Sinatra meeting Michael Jackson, because they're all working in the studio at around that time. And what I found so interesting, and especially with a previous song, which was the Tamia song, the way Tamia got discovered was she was at a party that Brenda Ritchie, Lionel Richie's then wife, was at. And she spotted Tamia, and she was like, oh, this girl's going to blow up. All of a sudden, Warner Brothers very interested in her. The next thing you know, they're at a party that Luther Vandross is hosting, and Quincy Jones is there. And Quincy Jones sees the girl, and he's like, she's going to be a star. I'm going to give her a chance. I'm releasing an album called Q's Juke Joint, and I'm going to give her an opportunity to record that song. It was actually a cover version of a song by a British artist called Mika Paris. Anyway, and it was written by Rod Temperton, who was like the guy who wrote like all the big Quincy Jones numbers. Anyway, so they were like, all right, let's. So the thing I've noticed is that Quincy, when he was working with a pack of people, he used them for everything. So it was the same people, Spoeg and Pluck. He would just cut and paste these people and use the same people. But what I loved about Quincy was that he was all about bringing everyone on board. Like, everyone, let's pull in, let's help. We are now helping Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
And that's everyone, let's go help Frank Sinatra. And then we're helping Michael Jackson, same people. We're going to help Michael Jackson. And we're all going to help Tamia become famous. Everyone, move over. We're going to help Tamia.
Yeah.
So it's a recurrent theme. And so this Frank Sinatra, it was written by Alan and Marilyn Bergman, Quincy Jones, and Peggy Lee Lipton Jones, who was Quincy Jones' third wife, and they had a child together called Rashida Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And Rashida Jones is a very famous actress now, and she was in Parks and Recreation. And then in 2018, she produced documentary about Quincy Jones's life called Quincy that was aired on Netflix, which is brilliant. Mm. If you ever want to see Quincy Jones in action, that is a brilliant documentary to watch.
Should we take a quick break and come back with more, huh?
Mm. So beautiful.
Michael Jackson.
You know, the thing is that, like, with Quincy Jones, like, pop music is... I mean, the reason why it's popular is because it doesn't challenge the audience too much. Mm-hmm. Because it can't be anything too sophisticated. It can't be like jazz. Mm-hmm. Jazz won't attract a large audience because it's designed to appeal to a sophisticated audience. Mm. Whereas pop is for the masses. Mm. And what Quincy Jones did with the three Michael Jackson albums was elevate pop music to a whole other level. Mm. You listen to the production, you listen to the layering. Mm. The arrangement, it's like he was bringing a completely different... It was a game changer. Quincy Jones, if he had just done those three albums, that would have been a career.
That would have been it. It would have been enough, more
exactly.
than enough.
But it was that plus more. You know, there was always more. But this song has got such an interesting history. So... the members of Toto were basically recording... They were like... They populated the Thriller album, and it was part of that whole Quincy Jones thing, like, get the family together and we're going to make, like, you can even see it in something like We Are the World. He brought all the people he worked with, we're going to do this thing together.
Didn't he just?
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like constant theme through the Quincy Jones story. But anyway, so this guy called David Page, he was from Toto, and he had put together like a tape of songs that he thought would be cool for Thriller. Anyway, but he had a demo. He didn't have enough tape. And so there was a demo on there of Human Nature. But he didn't want Quincy Jones to listen to that. And the song had been offered to Toto, but Toto were like, no, this is not like arena rock enough for us.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not going to work for us. So they weren't interested in the song. But it sort of was a write-off on the B-side of this cassette that he had recorded for Quincy Jones. And he had put all the songs that he wanted on the side A, and he labeled it for Quincy Jones so that he would only listen to
side A.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so Quincy listens to the cassette, and he's not really inspired by anything that he hears there. But the cassette player that the thing was playing on had something called auto reverse, mm-hmm. which meant that...
I remember that.
Yeah.
It used to do it by itself.
Yes, it used to loop to the other side. Mm-hmm. And so... Quincy was distracted and he had listened to the thing and the tape was just playing and then it looped to the other side and this track came on and Quincy was like,
what?
This song has to be on the album. And they had no intention of having the song on the album. And the song was actually written by another member of Toto called Steve Porcaro. And the song was written about... for his daughter. So his daughter came home and she was like, there's this boy and he's bullying me at school and he's being mean to me. And Steve wrote the song for his daughter to say, you know what, he probably has a thing for you and this is how he's acting out. And he wrote this thing as like to console his daughter. And that's how the whole thing started. It was never meant to be on Thriller. Actually, there was a song on Thriller already that it was replaced by. So there was a song on Thriller called Carousel, and that was removed to include Human Nature. And Human Nature has now become this iconic song that's been sampled by many artists. Yeah. It was the seventh single released from the album, and it went to number 7 on the US charts.
Yeah. Slow jams.
Slow jams. So that's also that, like the Tamia song that we heard earlier. It's from the Q's Juke Joint album, which was... I listened to that album way too many times. I loved Q's Juke Joint.
Yeah.
And Quincy seemed to do this thing whereby he liked introducing new artists on his album.
Yes, which is very clever and generous.
Yes, because what you're doing is you're using your platform to expose new artists. And he did that for Tamia. Mm. And there he had Babyface and Tamia and Barry White, the late great Barry White, who passed away in 2003, doing this song called Slow Jams. And it was written by, I guess, Rod Temperton, who did like all of the big Quincy Jones numbers. But anyway, that album won Best Engineered Album at the Grammy Awards in 1997. And Quincy Jones is one of the all-time great Grammy winners.
My goodness.
Like 28 Grammy Awards. He's actually an EGOT. He's got a Grammy, he's got a Tony, he's got an Emmy, and he's got an honorary Oscar for being a humanitarian. But and he got the Tony for the revival. So in 2015, I mean, the guy was still kicking it. I mean, that if you watch that Quincy Jones documentary, you'll see he was like, he had appointments all the time. And they did a revival of like The Color Purple as a musical in 2015, which was critically acclaimed, and it won the Tony Award. So he then became in 2015 an EGOT, which is like this one of the most prestigious like titles that you can have. It's someone who's got the Emmy, the Grammy, the Oscar, and the Tony Award, which is stage, screen, music, and film, all the big awards in each one of those fields. Anyway, so that was Slow Jams, Barry White. That voice is just so smooth and it's beautiful. And the combination of like Tamia's like smooth, beautiful, like velvety voice and Babyface's like almost trebly voice with Barry White's deep, throaty voice. It's just all of those voices work so beautifully together. But the song we heard before that was another like Quincy Jones introducing a new artist, James Ingram. So James Ingram was an unknown artist. In 1981, he got signed to a publishing deal with 20th Century Fox. And at that stage, he came to the attention of Quincy Jones. And Quincy Jones was like, I'm releasing an album called The Dude, and I'd like you to record a song for the album called Just Once. And so he recorded the song. It was included on the album, and the album was nominated for 12 Grammy Awards. I mean, it's like, you don't like, and that was in 1983. So the year before, he'd been nominated for 11 Grammy Awards for Thriller and E.T., and now 12 Grammy Awards for The Dude. So it's just like artists on how are you dominating so many consecutive Grammy Awards? But anyway, he hears about it. He includes the song on the album. It wins 3 Grammy Awards, the album, and then as Quincy does, he brings the whole family together and they start working on James Ingram's debut album. Mm. And on that debut album was the song Yamo Be There, which was James Ingram with Michael McDonald, who's one of my favorite voices. Yes. I mean, that guy's voice is like earth. It's just like, it's like soil. It's just such a beautiful voice. Yeah. And James Ingram, who then went on to do a plethora of like duets with other artists. Anyway, this song was written by Rod Temperton and James Ingram, Michael McDonald, and Quincy Jones, and it was featured on James Ingram's debut album, It's Your Night. And it was just such a brilliant, brilliant song. And you can hear elements of Thriller in it, actually, when you listen to the song.
So we're going to play Tevin Campbell next.
So Tevin Campbell was 12 years old, and now, like, when you hear about these young kids getting involved in the music industry, especially with this Diddy situation, you just cringe. But anyway, so he was 12 years old. The mother, and this is the other thing I also sometimes think to myself, where are the parents in all of this stuff? But anyway, so the mother thinks Tevin Campbell is super talented. The dad sort of abandoned the family. Mm-hmm. And so it was just Tevin Campbell and the mother. And she really believed, she was a gospel singer at church, and she really believed in her son, and she put a tape together, and she sent it to a guy called Bobby Humphrey, who was a well-known jazz musician. And he said, you should go to New York, and there's a video showcase there, and you should go there and record the thing, whatever. Mm. Anyway, it comes to the attention of this guy called Benny Medina. Mm. And Benny Medina was this iconic, or is this iconic, producer, manager. He worked with Chaka Khan, Prince, Madonna, like all the big names in the music industry. And he saw the tape and he was like, this kid is going to be hot stuff. And he approached Quincy Jones and he said, dude, you need to do something with this kid. He's going to be a big star. Anyway, Quincy Jones says, okay, cool. I've got an album coming up, like The Dude for James Ingram and like Q's Juke Joint for Tamia. I've got an album coming up, this is 1991, called Back on the Block. And let's get this kid to record a song on the album. Anyway, from there, he decides he's going to executive produce Tevin Campbell's first album, T-E-V-I-N. And this song, Tell Me What You Want Me To Do, was on the album. And it was it was a big hit and it helped launch.
Completely blew.
Then Quincy even got Prince on that album, and he did a song called Round and Round for Tevin Campbell on that album as well. Quincy just used the family all the time.
And Tevin Campbell was never the same. Did he stop working with Quincy Jones? What happened
so
there?
I think what happened was, so Quincy Jones did what he needed to do and so moved on. And Tevin Campbell, I think he had a lot of like demons.
Yeah.
And eventually he landed up dropping out of the music industry altogether. Yeah. Although he was really hot for quite some time.
Yeah.
And but I think Tevin needed to deal with his stuff.
Yeah.
Although I mean, I think they were still friendly with each very young, very impressionable. Getting into an industry like this where you blow up and become super famous.
He was so young.
How do you form identity
under
that kind of scrutiny, you know?
I think he struggled with that.
Yeah.
So let's play Tevin Campbell. Tell me what you want to do.
Actually, guys, Pamela's got a really nice voice. I think she's been holding back on us. She was singing in between the songs and... Yarr. I'm like, where's Penny Libiani now? She should be taking you to the next round. You should get a golden ticket.
Oh my goodness. Sheldon, thank you. It was
thank
so
you, ma'am.
I really appreciate it. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We'll see you next week.
Okay.
And if you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.